Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to another Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, it is late April and there are like clouds in the air and it's kind of gloomy outside, maybe reflecting the current state of the Suns right now in summer. The night after the Battle of Winterfell perhaps is what's going on out there more so. I don't really know. How are you, man?
Good. Caught up on Game of Thrones. We're going to hit this hard because the NFL draft is finally over and that whole thing's allowing us more freedom to use our brains on basketball.
Definitely. And I just wanted to touch base on Igor getting fired again because Monday night was extremely hectic for us. Tuesday was still hectic, and that was when we podcasted, and it was like a 15-minute episode where we kind of just said what we've always said, and I don't think we... Apparently, like, sleeping on it wasn't enough, at least for me, at least. I know I was still very... I think I was just really dead set on Monty getting hired within a week, which I have 24 hours to be right on, and we'll see. We'll see. I still think there's a good chance that he's the coach, and that's why they did this. But we had... Wednesday was draft prep, Thursday and Friday was the draft, which was insane. You were at the Cardinals... insane asylum, I guess I would call it, because they basically just, and this is no shots at them and how they handled it, this is just how the draft works, but you were basically just sitting in a workroom. It's like, Kyler Murray's the pick, and then you maybe got him on a conference call, and then you waited like 4 hours for Kyman Kingsbury to talk or something, right?
Yeah, that was the first night. The other 2 days were getting up and down on conference calls, writing pressers. It was fun, though. It was fun. Good food there. That's what really stood out during the NFL draft.
I had fun too, but those days always turn my brain into just goo. And I was cocky on Thursday night when we were out after the draft, and I told you I was like, "I'm good, I'm feeling great." And then on Friday at like 6 o'clock, I was like, after about like 20 minutes after Rosen got traded, I was like, "Oh my god, I can't." So now that we've had that to sort of rehabilitate on that and Igor, it's now Monday, so it's been a little under a week. Do you really have any new thoughts? You kind of asked me right back when I posed the question to you before we turned the microphones on. But I think I'm just more in shock that they're looking for it, that there's a head coaching search going on for them right now. I think
it hasn't hit me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think overarching point after we kind of just from the gut spoke in our last podcast was, this is a huge risk until Monty is hired. It's a huge risk if they fail, because then what do you do? If he's hired, it's still a risk because there's no more resetting here. If they reset again, it's a complete reset from the top down. And then we're just spinning in circles, like spinning our tires in mud, whatever metaphor you want to make. So, yeah, it's... That's where I'm at. It's the same bad position. It's not better after sitting on it for a week and thinking about it at the NFL. It's like I'm covering the Cardinals, and as much bad stuff I see about Steve Keim, who's had bad drafts, who's made a change at head coach also, which I feel completely different about than the Suns situation. It's like, and I think you tweeted this at someone like, yeah, that's... Steve Keim, what did you say? Steve Keim would have to...
Someone suggested that the Cardinals were taking over the Suns' spot as like the dumpster fire of the town. I was like, dude, he would have to start Phil Dawson at quarterback week one to match the Suns. And Phil Dawson is a free agent 43-year-old kicker.
That's true. That'd be like not having a point guard almost.
Yeah, actually 43. I just like...
No, he's 43.
He's 44.
Oh, he's 44 now.
You had him 43 when he turned. He might have been in January.
At one point, he was 43.
If you're going to learn one thing from this episode, people, it's that Phil Dawson's birthday is on January 23rd. There you go.
Okay.
It's still really terrible. It's not an in the moment overreaction at all. It was still a terrible. I had a lot of people not come me really, but just kind of come back and just say, well, he isn't a good coach and he didn't get the ball enough and all these kinds of things. And that's not the point here. The point isn't that he was, I will not disagree with you if you thought he was a bad head coach year one. I'm not disagreeing with that. Was he bad enough to deserve to get fired after one season? I think is one of the main arguments here, and he wasn't. And then the other one is that even if he was bad enough to deserve to get fired, you probably should have still waited until next year. And the thing I guess we can talk about is what James Jones had to say, quote unquote. I am using air quotes right now for the listeners. I'm actually not. Like, isn't that cool how I can just lie to them? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't. His hands are not moving.
People. I'm extremely dishonest. I went to that, and there were questions in mind that I wanted to ask, and I was looking to not let off some steam, but kind of just see how they would respond to some of the... We get a tradition, and I use we as the Arizona media as being light, and it's like, yeah, we are, because there's a lack of media around the teams because they're not very good, and there's the lack of I don't want to have this conversation anymore. I just like got into it, and now I just want to back out.
There aren't a million media entities. This is a small market compared.
It is a small market, and I agree with that, but with that being said, as someone who will typically not go into everything looking to ask the hard questions and that sort of mentality, I was going to ask a couple that I normally would not ask because I felt it was appropriate given the circumstance that it happened. But James Jones started off the presser, which was not labeled as really anything. It was like the future of the franchise or whatever is however they described it in there. But it was the we fired our head coach and we're moving forward podcast. But the whole part was... The second part, we're moving forward, because he started his press conference by saying, I'm not going to talk about specific issues and why. Basically, I'm not going to talk about why we fired Igor. And then I looked around, and I was like, why are we here then?
Yeah.
There's no reason for us to be here. Luckily, a couple of questions, one was mine, that kind of got some answers out of him. I asked him about player development and if they're still going to focus on player development from their coach. And he basically said, Igor's player development didn't translate to wins, and that's one of the reasons we fired him. And you can disagree with me interpreting it as that, but that's basically what I thought he was saying to that answer. And then you caught the big one, which was apparently they brought him in because they thought he would coach veterans well, and they wanted to try and win now with Trevor Ariza and Ryan Anderson.
I don't know what that was about. Everyone, like, my Twitter blew up because everyone was like, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense at all. And then, of course, everyone points out about the development issue that you were talking about. There's like 5+ players on this team who had their best seasons or got significantly better. Like, how did they not have... Like, it just didn't make sense. And if he was saying that it didn't lead to wins, well, then that's going against the other thing he said, which was we weren't looking at wins about this. So it was a lot of nothing to me.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of expecting going in there. I'm trying to think of really anything else he said that caught my attention. I think one of the things that I talked about with a buddy over the weekend was that, yes, DeAndre Ayton should have gotten the ball more in the second half of the season, but I think that's because he actually improved a lot under Igor, and Igor should have been more, just more willing to get him involved in the offense because he had shown that improvement. I don't think he made the in-season adjustment to get him the ball more as he had improved more as a post scorer. I don't think the numbers would back up that he was getting the ball more as the season progressed. It was kind of just like an uneven thing throughout the entire season.
It was like a 2 games the game plan was to go to him, and then after he proved like he could
the
very
Lakers
well
game, yeah.
Yeah, handle it real well. And the Warriors game, like those two I think stand out. There might be one more, but it's like, wait, why didn't you give him a little more, put more on his plate on a daily basis. But I mean, we spoke on that a long time, and I kind of see where he was coming from, just working on the fundamentals. But yeah, he's gone now. Here we are.
To wrap on that, if James Jones doesn't work out in Phoenix, I think one of the things that's always going to stand out to me about him is that he says things that I don't necessarily disagree with the central point that he is making, but in the grand scheme of things with the Phoenix Suns, I don't think you can say those things or believe those things. And the thing that he said, which you know what I'm getting to, is having stability for the sake of stability isn't something we are into. And that is something where I agree with that. You should not keep a head coach just because you need stability, even though you think he's not the guy for the job. But with that being said, the additional context, I believe, is you
this
just...
This is the Suns.
This is the Suns, and it appears that you and Jeff Bauer just want to hire your guy, and I think their guy is Monty Williams, and I think they just want their own head coach now because it's their regime now, and they don't believe in Igor. It doesn't sound like James Jones was a fan of Igor. I don't know. If he was a fan of Igor, he would have kept Igor. It's pretty simple. Or if he was the one making this decision, which we're all led to believe that he made this decision, which seemed to be reinforced a couple of times, which makes me think that maybe he actually didn't make this decision.
Eh, who can say? But the whole point is, it's... I wish GMs would just come out and say, yeah, we kind of wanted a guy that we trust more. Like, if yeah. you're a new GM, that's not like crapping on the guy who's out going out of there. It's just relationships are important in this business.
So the latest right now is that the Suns went to Toronto to meet with Monty Williams before game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals. That was on Friday, according to Woj. And then on Saturday, they traveled to Portland to interview the two assistants, whose names I'm not going to get to know because they're not going to be the head coaches of the Suns. And they're just involved in this entire process because the Suns need to add interviews to make it look like they've had a comprehensive, extensive interviewing process, when in reality, they just have one guy. They've always had one guy, and that's why they fired their other guys to bring in the one guy.
Yeah, because you got to make it look better than Earl Watson hire, basically. That's how I agree, or have seen it as well. I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't talk. Maybe we should talk about the other two guys, David Vanderpool and
I refuse.
None.
Nope. I can take the blame here if people want to give us heat for not treating
when Monty
them like
Williams turns
candidates.
Them down tomorrow. We'll just come back with a new podcast. How about that? Okay.
Yeah, when Monty Williams is not in the picture anymore, he goes to the Lakers, or he just says, I don't want to work in this dumpster fire, then I'm good. But the links between Bauer and Jones and him are just way too obvious. And
that's why it's going to be really bad when it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty in this, perhaps, that we might see. That's the latest. They talked to those guys on Saturday. We haven't gotten an update from Woj yet because, guess what? I don't think anyone really cares about the Suns head coaching search right now. Definitely not locally, with the Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury renaissance happening with the Cardinals right now. That's going to be the big news story, at least for a couple more days. And then nationally, the NBA playoffs are going on. People are complaining about refs. What? Are you serious? Referees complaining? Are you sure? It was bad. Don't get me wrong, but we'll talk about that more later. We're going to hit on the playoffs before we go. But the main thing, not the main thing we're going to talk about, one of the things we're going to talk about today was the lottery. Looking forward, it is 2 weeks away, and I think this is the most dramatic lottery we are ever going to cover so far, because I believe that with the odds, there are several teams that have a chance, you know, and I think it's exciting. Like if you're a Grizzlies fan or a Pelicans fan or a Mavericks fan, you've got a 20% chance at moving up to the top three, which in that position before, the odds were just drastically smaller to land in the top three. And there's so much, and the drama is there because there's a no doubt clear number one guy. And I think no matter how you feel about Ja Morant, logically, I think there are some people who still are beating the drum that he's the number one guy in this draft or whatever, which you're...
I don't know who those people are.
You need to take your medication. The Zion thing to me over this and being as hyped as he is, which deservedly so, I think this is actually one of those weird ones where the hype machine nationally and the national media and ESPN and just hyping this dude up kind of meets what he deserves as one of the biggest prospects. I'm higher on him than you are, but I think he still is without a doubt he's one of the top three prospects of this decade, right? You would say, if you look back on the guys who have gone number one.
I'm trying to think. I mean, even if he's not top three as far as like what you think he can be, he's definitely what, two, as far as like unique mix of exciting to watch, hard playing, the most unique athlete you've ever seen, was on a good team. All these things. So I think that makes him like Anthony Davis had a unibrow and was really good at basketball, but he's just like I don't know. He's so unique and compelling as a storyline, I think.
John Wall, Kyrie, AD, Anthony Bennett, Andrew Wiggins, Kat, Ben Simmons, Fultz, Ayton slash Doncic, wherever you landed on that debate. Those are the guys. So I mean,
who was in, even guys through the top fives of those drafts, only AD, I think, was like, this guy's going to change the game.
I think AD and...
Giannis was like, oh, he might be really good, he might be really bad.
Yeah. Oh, we're talking pre-draft. Yeah, just pre-draft number one overall. That's the biggest. The thing I hate the most about the draft by far is when people don't talk about drafts when they were in the pre-draft stage. People say, oh, they passed on Giannis. And
it's like, well,
yes, they passed on Giannis.
The Suns didn't even like drive 40 minutes from, there was like an Adidas Nations or one of those things and they didn't bother because they just thought, and like, yeah, they screwed up probably by doing that, but maybe they had already scouted him or just like, it's not worth our time.
And them taking Giannis 15 in that draft or wherever he went, that was a quote-unquote reach. That was one of those Georgios Papagiannis, Gershon Yabusele.
I wouldn't go that far.
It was a guy in the second round they took in the mid-first. He was the second. He had a little hype.
Papagiannis, nah. Papagiannis is like, that's a little like.
I guess. Yeah, I'm exaggerating.
So
I would say AD for sure. Cat, that's where I start having a conversation. Maybe I would have AD and Doncic above him pre-draft. That would be very close though, and then I'd have like Fultz would be in the conversation for me. I'd absolutely adore
it. Just
Fultz.
Skewed for me because like Doncic wasn't even majority number one crazy guy in national circles, not just here. So
to that point, that is where the storyline is for this draft. But I think from a Suns perspective, and what we're going to talk about for a couple minutes here, is looking at number two, because John Gambadoro has already kind of mentioned on the radio a few times that the Suns would definitely look into the possibility of trading up to number two to get Ja Morant if they landed at three or four or five and a certain partner came up. But I think with the way Ja is being, I'm interested to see him and Culver are the two, I think the two through like six, and how that mashes up from once we get to the point in the draft process where the boards start leaking a little bit more and it's clear where the divide is. It seems like right now, though, there is a clear divide between number two and number three, that Ja Morant is without a doubt the number two prospect in this draft. And I think everyone at number two who could use him is going to take him, and has a reason not to take him. And we're mentioning this and we're going to talk about it because the Mavericks, those three teams I mentioned, the Mavericks, Grizzlies, and Pelicans, each have a 6% chance at landing the number two pick. Washington has a 9% chance, Atlanta 10.5, Minnesota even like 3.3, and those sound like really low odds because they are, but they've gone up, and there's going to be crazy movement in the lottery. It's going to happen.
I mean, if you just add up all of these teams that kind of have point guards, let's see, Atlanta, Washington have like 9 to 10%, New Orleans 6, Memphis 6, Dallas 6, like to get number one even, and then obviously you're going down to number two. But
yeah,
I don't know, there's just whatever that math is really good chances of them jumping.
Mm-hmm.
Even 3 and 4, I mean.
So I wanted to look at all these teams and their point guard situations and just see, is there a situation in which it falls to them favorably where they could, this is operating under a microscope, which I believe to be true, is that the Suns are jaw heads and they think he is this number two player in this draft without a doubt, especially with the point guard need that they have and everything. It just makes too much sense to me. So running through all those teams from top to bottom, what I'm going to do first is just eliminate some teams that we know would just take Morant at two, and it would take a significant offer for them. Chicago only has Chris Dunn.
Nope.
And Zach LaVine. I think you take Ja Morant there. Washington is interesting, and I don't have them as a team that would potentially debate trading it because they have John Wall and his really long contract, and like, where would Ja Morant play? So I think they're in like the middle ground right now. But I'm not sure, man. Memphis, I think, would just trade Mike Conley and take Ja Morant and kind of move forward with him and Triple J. Minnesota has Jeff Teague coming back, but that's only on one more year. And then Tyus Jones is a restricted free agent. I don't see that as any reason not to take Ja Morant. Charlotte Hornets are going to be without Kemba Walker because he's going somewhere else. Then they have Malik Monk and Devontae Graham behind that. You take Ja Morant. And Miami has Goran Dragic. Remember him, folks? That trade didn't work out for Miami. Yikes. He has one more year left. He's going to take his player option probably and go from there. And then Boston was the last team I wanted to bring up. They're kind of in the debate zone, but if they get Kyrie back, would they even want Ja?
Like, Danny Ainge would get picks, I feel like.
Yeah, Danny Ainge would get picks. He would keep Marcus Smart and Kyrie, and then they have Terry
if he
Rozier
can find James Jones's phone number. Yeah.
But I feel like that's even a situation where if you land at two and you're going to lose Kyrie, you think you're going to lose Kyrie, you still trade it for a player or something like that. I don't think they would. So the teams we did not discuss, the ones that are interesting to bring up here, if they land two or three or whatever and are in range, the Knicks, they just traded for Dennis Smith Jr., and they have Frank Ntilikina still. Now, we can say from our perspective, you just draft Ja and go from there. But you just traded for Dennis Smith, like you just did. I don't know. Do you think they're like what do you think they would do?
That actually is more 50-50 to me, because I could see Fizdale just being like, we're taking the best player, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And them trusting him, but that's still like a weird, neither of them can really play the two. Mm-hmm. Granted, Dennis is not really a point guard, but Jaw's just as raw probably when he comes out, so it's like I have no clue what they would do. If you're New York, though, you need to win this draft, so I think you kind of have to. A really good trade would have to come across.
They're in the debate range, which we're talking about right now, for sure.
Okay, here's the other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel you said this because you actually like RJ a lot better, right? He's two on your big board.
Mm-hmm.
Knicks, like, it's not ridiculous to say RJ's maybe on 30% of the NBA teams is number two on their big boards.
Yeah.
That's not a stretch. So if the Knicks are one of those and it just makes more positional fit that reasons, then yeah, maybe they just go RJ.
Cavaliers, Gambo has been on the record that he believes if they went number two, they would take Ja and trade Colin Sexton.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want Colin Sexton?
No.
I don't either. Moving on. Atlanta is the most obvious team here because they have a guy named Trae Young who is better than Ja Morant, much better in fact, and they are fifth. They have the highest odds and are the no doubt, like, they would look to trade down, or they would, if they didn't like the trade down, they would just take RJ Barrett or Jared Culver or whatever, but they seem to be in that. If what Gambo said on the radio is that it's kind of the same. Some teams don't see a difference between 3 and 7, really. There's the RJ Barrett, Jared Culver, Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter, whoever else is in there. Kevin Porter Jr. I don't know if I agree with it or disagree with it, but it's if Atlanta's at 2 and they feel the same about the wings and the Suns are at even like 6. And they say, here, we'll add another wing. Here's Josh Jackson or TJ Warren and another thing plus 6 to move up to 2. I think that's something that they would be interested in for sure.
It's also interesting with if you throw Barrett in the mix. Now, this is like two different variables we're dealing with, but you throw Barrett in, let's say the Knicks are second. Someone takes Zion first, Knicks go second, they get RJ Barrett. And then if the Hawks are third, then if you're the Suns and you got fourth, then maybe that's not the end of the world. But that's going to, again, need to be a really specific scenario where two things go their way. So, I mean, yeah, if we're talking lottery odds, theoretically, the Suns could be 4. It just depends who's in front of them there.
I'm going to save one team for the end here and skip past them for now. Dallas has the, I believe, let me pull up. Tankathon again.
2, 3.
They have oh my gosh.
What are you looking for?
They have one pick and then Atlanta has theirs or something. If it moves a certain way, I'm on the wrong site right
Couldn't
now.
Couldn't tell you.
Like, pick odds up. Okay, so Dallas has their first round pick, but it's 9 right now, but Atlanta gets it if it lands outside the top 5.
Oh.
So Dallas keeps it if it's in the top 5. So if they were to land number 2 or number 3, we bring them up again. I don't know why you would want to add Ja to the whole Doncic thing. Just let Luka run the whole thing. Just adding a ball-dominant point guard. They've been very... Me and Rich Anthony have been talking about it on Twitter and just laughing about how you look at the starting lineup Luka had at the start of the season. They got rid of that in 50 games. They're like, Harrison Barnes? No.
Yeah.
Wes Matthews? No. hi, DeAndre Jordan, we'll see you later. They just got rid of all these guys who you could question the fit with Luka so fast that they just were immediately just sent packing. Just an impressive like year turnaround for them, adding Kristaps to that too.
Good thing knowing what you want.
What would the Los Angeles Lakers do if they landed too? Because they have Lonzo Ball, who also went number two. Would they look to trade the pick?
I was thinking they would maybe trade Lonzo.
Right with the Suns.
He and LeBron are like tight, though, right? I think they're fairly tight.
They seem to be buds.
He like showed up on LeBron's show, I think.
Yeah, that episode's coming out.
I don't know what this means,
or whatever,
but
hey,
I take that as they don't hate each other. But like Jaw's a completely different player, and in aging LeBron times, maybe he's more of a better fit.
So if the Lakers land at two, do they look to trade down, and that's where the Suns could trade up and get Jaw, or do they look to trade to select Jaw and trade Lonzo? That's where the Suns could get Lonzo. Would they give up the number 6 or 7 pick for Lonzo? Would they give up the number five pick for Lonzo? The number four pick for Lonzo? That's really fascinating to me.
I could also see
You know what's not fascinating to me? Watching Jaw play with LeBron. That's I don't know why that would work.
I think you could pull off Jaw.
You could pull off LeBron with
Lonzo, LeBron in a weird way, but you would need like a front office to like have a good plan around those three guys. I don't know what they have right now.
In that same grouping, which is why I skipped them to go last, New Orleans. New Orleans lands at two. The most obvious thing is to just blow this thingy up.
Yep.
Trade Jaw, select Jaw. Trade Drew Holiday for whatever you can get.
Yeah.
And if the Suns are at three, the Suns are at four, they're like, hey, now you have two top three picks. We'll take that Drew Holiday fella off your hands, please. If it just falls into their lap like that, they get the natural Drew Holiday successor and the natural, this is our guy. That's the other thing, too. They have Julius Randle, I guess, if he comes back, but...
No, he's going to the Suns, man.
Oh, God. The look you just made, yeah, sums up what I'm saying well, in that they would just have their guy, and he would become their guy, and whoever else they got in this draft, potentially, if the Suns were able to trade, like, 3, 4, 5, or 6. So I think we came into this discussion talking about it a certain way, like, who lands it to, but I think that's the most interesting part, is that the Lakers, and the Lakers are at 11, so that's highly unlikely. New Orleans at 7, still pretty unlikely. But those are, I think Atlanta, New Orleans, and the Lakers are the three most obvious teams to watch for here if they land at two.
And not even all of those are like, this is the Joth route avenue for the Suns. It's also, this is how they get a point guard in general.
Yeah.
Which, hey, do you remember that first podcast we had before the season? The Suns didn't have a point guard. Hey, do you know what the theme of the Suns is now? They don't have a point guard.
Yeah, they had bad. I think they don't have a point guard still. They don't have a point guard. Hopefully they have a point guard in October.
It would be a good idea. Would advise.
It would be. Speaking of getting point guards, you probably won't have a point guard if you're in the playoffs. And the NBA playoffs are going on. The semifinals are up right now. I believe there's one series. The last series to get underway is Portland and Denver. That's tonight.
Yes.
Did you have any... I think the most obvious thing here is just the playoff tradition, like any other, where centers just get eviscerated off the floor, and it's like there's only a certain amount that can play. Seeing DeAndre Ayton in his rookie year, have you had any kind of hesitations or sort of reactions to, oh, wow, I'm glad they have DeAndre Ayton now even more, or anything like that from watching this?
I mean, I don't think the playoffs have changed my mind so much. Centers are still super valuable.
Yeah.
If they're unique, if they bring something different, like every center is going to bring rebounding. Every center should bring rebounding and like defense. But if you can do different things, I mean, part of the playoffs is just like matchups and trying to figure teams out. And if you say like, if the Suns are playing the Bucks, for example, and the Suns did what they did the Bucks in that one game, they beat the Bucks in. Like,
that's what I was going to bring up.
What's gonna happen the next game? Like, how is Milwaukee going to adjust? And I think that's a fascinating part where, hey, you steal a game against a team that might be better than you because they're just not prepared for a guy like DeAndre and who can do those unique things against your team. So I think that in that regard, it's really interesting. The Nuggets, to me, Do you want to stick on that point, actually?
I was going to say the same thing with Giannis, and just that I think people forget way too often that these types of... We look at it from a grand scale of this wouldn't survive in the playoffs and all that. It's really just comes down to matchups and how certain teams know each other and attack each other and just these little things. It's like, who is going to guard Giannis? Actually, we have Al Horford,
yeah,
who is the Giannis stopper. So now the question is, what are you going to do? Because people, I think Mike Prada from SB Nation is like one of the three best guys at this and maybe the best guy. I love following him during the playoffs because he is so focused on little inside the,
yeah,
inside the strategy battles back and forth and stuff. And he was saying like, hey, the Giannis with shooters thing is great and you win 60 games with it, but this is the playoffs now and you guys are going to have to start to run a couple more things now that Giannis with shooters doesn't work because they have Al Horford and they're smothering him. And I think DeAndre is that type of player on both ends where he can swing, he can be that random thing where, looking at it, like maybe, I'm trying to think of a Western Conference team, but like Ben Simmons came to mind, and it's like, what if you just like threw DeAndre on Ben Simmons and was like, okay, Ben, you want to try and charge into him? Like, we'll give you the space to shoot. You want to try and charge and run into him and finish over him? Go for it.
Make passes around him.
Exactly.
Once you drive.
Yeah, he's that type of defensive potential like X factor. And then offensively, obviously, I mean, if you face a team that doesn't have size or you just have a mismatch to go at. And I think it goes both ways, where if you play a team like Oklahoma City, you're like, oh man, they have Steven Adams, and he always struggles against Steven Adams or Rudy Gobert or whatever, and it's very fascinating to see where he fits into both of those sides of the discussion. I think it is actually, I'm actually not learning a lot from watching these playoffs and after watching a year from him, but just seeing where he can actually like affect things more than in a regular season game, if that makes sense. I think he's actually more... People are going to slay me for this who hate Ayton or are down on him, but I think he's actually more built for the playoffs in that sense. But you can also look at it the other way, where it's like, oh, they can just run him in pick and roll to death and he's getting played off the floor. So
that would be a good two game like snapshot of it, what you just said.
Boban was fun until they started running him in pick and roll to death and just eviscerating those lineups. Poor Boban.
Yeah. It was like, hey, his plus minus is great, and then they're just like, oh, yeah, when we have time to game plan for you. That's the thing, too. It's like you're playing the same team a million, or not a million times, maybe seven times, but it's you have that much more time to look at just like the backup center, and maybe that matchup is where the game is broken open, and that's where you win a game, and then maybe it's a different story the next game. But, yeah.
The last thing I wanted to talk about, the playoffs, and Max has been all over this on Twitter, just in a more broad general hammering the point down way, but something I've talked about a lot with Book is that there's a humongous difference between being a top 15 player in this league and like a top 25 or 30 player, and I think that we're actually kind of seeing that with Book, and that he might be better than we think he is, because you watch how much Donovan Mitchell struggled, and it's just Book being like 9% better than Donovan Mitchell, or 15% better, or 20 or 30 or whatever the difference is. That difference is so huge in like a playoff series like that. And I'm not saying that Book would come out in his first playoff series and not shoot 30% or whatever, because I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's just such a complete offensive player right now, and you even see like Jamal Murray, dude just kind of looked nervous and scared, and I just know like Book would just come out there just, and he would have butterflies or whatever, because he's that type of like basketball person, but after 2 minutes he would settle in and be like, all right, like we're ready. And I look at both those young guards specifically, and Max has been the one, like, can you imagine Denver with Book like as their point guard instead of Jamal Murray? And it's that type of stuff with Utah too, where I think we underappreciate how good he is and how much better he would be in systems like that.
I'm going back to this. I always go back to this. Like, Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell last year had really good playoff runs, and they got hot. But I think we keep overlooking that they had good pieces around them and a good system around them. And Devin Booker's, basically anytime he goes into the game, do you think they actually game plan for many of his teammates? It's always about him.
Yeah.
Every regular season game. And those other two guys I mentioned don't necessarily get that. I know that they were respected last year, but Book has been through that and has kind of, we've already seen the, like, oh, he's struggling when they trap him and get the ball out of his hands. And then we see him get better and start swinging it and murdering teams with, what, that Spurs game where he had, what, 14 assists or whatever? Like, that was a result of him learning and already going through that. So I think that's at least promising that he's not behind the curve, that he might be seeing these things he might see in the playoffs if, you know, they ever get there.
To that point, it presents improvement opportunities too. Like if they get bounced in the first round in six games or whatever, and it's because of something specific they picked Booker on, which they will. That's what teams, smart teams do. They find out the weaknesses in your team, and just like Brad Stevens, just basically. I was just going to make a Game of Thrones analogy, but it's very weird space right now where people are getting like pissy about spoilers apparently, and I'm just like, Game of Thrones is something where if you aren't caught up at this point and you aren't watching it the night of, you just need to know that this is like a event.
Yeah, you can't do these things anymore. That'd be like waiting to like see the NBA finals, like the results of Game 7, and then it's like 2 days later and I'm like, I'll get around to watching it. You think you wouldn't hear about who won by existing in this human space we call life?
I disagree with the sports comp a little bit in terms of just not getting the game spoiled, but I think that there are certain movies and TV shows where this is an event. I was not on Twitter during the Breaking Bad finale. I couldn't watch it live. And you know why I wasn't on Twitter? Because I knew people were going to be live tweeting it because it's the Breaking Bad finale. A lot of people felt like that was their favorite show of all time, best show of all time. They're going to be tweeting along to it. Maybe they're not tweeting spoilers, but they're tweeting stuff. And in Game of Thrones, we've had already 2 weeks where people have been spoiling it left and right as the episode airs. So I don't know what you were expecting if you were on Twitter for the third episode. But anyway, I'm just going to save myself from there and save the people who maybe like thought, oh, well, the Suns podcast, like they thought this was their
safe. Went off the rails.
They're like, okay, I've been off Twitter. Oh, and you went part of the Suns podcast. Perfect. This will help me get through to tonight when I can finally. And then I just spoil it for them there.
Have this episode as a disclaimer, and then you can spoil away from here on out. And it's like, well, you should have listened to the whatever episode this is.
Yeah.
And they know.
100%.
Okay.
I can't remember what point I was going to make on book, but to keep it in that same realm to end the conversation, Dame went from top 10, 15 player to show like the gap. This is what a superstar looks like, a top 5 guy, because holy moly, just ruthless, so cold and so just ruthless is what I keep coming back to. Just the way he eviscerated the Thunder, it was tragic almost, the manner in which he did it.
Yeah I
kind of agreed. You know what,
hot
take,
fun.
I kind of agreed with Paul George. What's he supposed to say if you listen to the question? I know, okay, this is again, I don't disagree with that, but I'm saying the guy asked the question and he was like, I mean, the game's tied. You're sitting there. You look up at the clock and see 2 seconds left, and he's still 40 feet behind the line. You got to be thinking, okay, the job's done here. And then he just kind of thought about it for two. He was like, yeah, definitely. It was a bad shot.
Could have gotten the ball out of his hands. Got him on the run a little more. No.
Wait, what?
Got him on the move more.
Oh, pressured him a little bit more?
Yeah. I mean, I understand. And also, it's like semantics. It's like,
yeah.
That was a tough
shot.
It's
just that dumb game where if it doesn't go in, it's a bad shot. And like that, I actually agree, though, because if that doesn't go in, people are like, why didn't Dame go like 10 feet in? I understand that he's hot and he's shooting 50% from 30 feet out or whatever, but I don't know. I just enjoyed the Game of Thrones memes that came from that moment. That's not a spoiler.
That's not a spoiler. Those memes should have spoiled everything for you if you weren't just on Twitter last night.
God bless NBA Game of Thrones crossover memes.
Yeah.
That's just,
it was
so
aggressive.
That's so in my zone. It's like 99th percentile of the Kellen Olsen pop culture, whatever you want to call it.
Life.
The pop culture, whatever you want to call it, podcast will be back next week. If the Suns don't hire a head coach, it is Monday afternoon. So we'll see. I think it's going to get done this week. And
still a chance.
And we'll see how long it drags out, but I do not really see this dragging out. So we'll be back to give our reactions to that later in the week if it does happen. If it doesn't, we'll be back next week. And that is the week before the lottery. We're getting there. We're going to be kicking into draft season here pretty soon. Hope you guys will join us for that next episode. We'll talk to you then.